Hello.
Hey. Welcome to another edition of the Jedi and Germs on the Jazz Show, brought to you by TornbySports.com. I'm Alan Jedi Zog. On the other side is John English. And it's a special trade deadline edition of the Jedi and Germs show via phone, mind you. We're not in the usual studio bit like we normally are. We're via phone. John, how are you?
Good. Well, I'm always on phones.
Yes. Well, and technically we are on the phone, but this is we're both kind of running differently this time. So, you've been staying on top of the trades that went down today.
Yep.
And I guess your first thoughts, initial thoughts on that on the Enes Kanter trade.
Well, it took a while to figure out exactly what the Jazz are getting, and this is my understanding of what they're getting. They traded away Enes and Steve Novak. They're getting back Kendrick Perkins, who they're going to buy out, so that's nothing. Grant Jarrett, who is a D-League guy, he's played 5 entire NBA games. That's a wash. I don't really know what to think of that. They got a first-rounder from Oklahoma, which is lottery-protected, and as long as the Thunder make the playoffs this year, they will get that pick in 2017. And it is lottery-protected through 2020, and if by 2020 they still don't get that pick, they'll get 2 second-rounders. So I'm not happy that they traded away a number 3 pick for something that's guaranteed to not be in the lottery. They also got a second-round pick from Detroit in 2017. So, assuming the Thunder makes the playoffs, and assuming this year, and assuming the Thunder make the playoffs in 2017, that means in the year 2017, the Jazz have 7 picks, because they have the first from Golden State, they'll have a first from the Thunder, they'll have their own first, and then they'll have 4 second-rounders. So that's where we are. We basically cleared up space this year. Rudy's going to get a ton of minutes as a starter. I think they're tanking a little bit here by not bringing back much in return this year. I think they're content to go ahead and stay in the bottom 7 this year and get another good pick this summer, because this draft class is starting to shape up to look pretty good. And then maybe in this summer we'll see them go after some free agents and try to win again. But this trade was all about clearing space for Rudy to get minutes, trying to get something for Kanter, because they figured that he was going to get an offer they didn't want to match this summer. I feel like they probably could have got a better deal. Overall, I'm not that enthused about it. But, you know, if I could look at an alternate timeline and see that we lost Kanter for nothing in the summer, then I'd prefer this timeline. But, you know, it is what it is. A bunch of teams made trades. A bunch of teams got better. Jazz are not one of the teams that got better.
Okay. I'm kind of with you. Especially, I mean, I said this earlier a couple times on Twitter. I felt like this trade for the draft was meh. That's the word I use, meh, because it was you wanted to dump the guy and not end up, that the Jazz were going to get stuck getting rid of Kanter and probably getting nothing in return, like you said, if they waited till summer. In this case, they get something in return. They get value in return. They get Perkins in return, but interestingly enough, they're going to, you know, waive or let him go once they pick him up. But it is. It's kind of meh. I'm with you. The one point, we'll jump to this a little later, because I want to talk about the tank watch and how significantly this does and the trades today do or do not affect tank watch for the Jazz. But out of all things said and done, though, yeah, you're not going to see initial returns for this trade. Not at all.
No. I should also say they got the rights to, I don't know how to say his name yet, Tibor Pleiss.
Right.
He is playing overseas. He's initially a German. He was drafted in the second round in 2010. He has yet to come to the NBA, and right now he is playing as Ante Tomic's backup on the Barcelona team.
So really, this is probably another one of those guys you'll never, ever, ever see in a Jazz uni.
Sounds like it. No, actually, it sounds like it's more likely that he'll come over than Tomic. It sounds like Tomic is never going to come over. Is it Tomic or Tomic? I don't know how to say his name. But he's like 28 now, so he's probably just not going to come over. But this guy, he's 25, and it sounds like even though he signed a two-year deal last year, his buyout isn't that much. And so if they wanted to, they could bring him over this summer. If they really wanted to, they could probably buy him out right now and bring him over.
Right.
His numbers aren't that overwhelming. He's 6.9 points and 4.1 rebounds in 13.9 minutes a game. I never heard of him until a couple hours ago, so just kind of been trying to see what I could find on him.
So really, if that equates to a 15 to 20 minute stretch, you know, you're only going to get, like you said, between 6 and 10 points out of him, maybe 5, 6 rebounds out of him. But maybe that's enough if you've got Gobert and you want Gobert to sit for a little while.
Yeah, by getting rid of two of their big guys, it's going to mean more minutes for Derek and Rudy. It also probably means more minutes for Trevor. Trevor's been kind of the fourth big, and his minutes have kind of waffled as Rudy's gotten better. And Cantor had been improving as the season had gone on. But now Rudy's going to get a lot more minutes. Derek's going to spend a little more time at the five. You're going to see Trevor Booker more. We probably see Jeremy Evans get into more games. This Grant Jarrett guy, I'm not encouraged by what I've seen so far. They might just send him back to the D League.
He might be.
I think they'll give him a chance, but I'm not expecting anything out of him.
He might be injury insurance anyway. I mean, how many times this season have we either gone without Cantor and or Favors, and the Jazz have had to go deep on their roster to make something work? So, you know, and that's where we saw the benefit of Novak, and now you're missing your depth at the bigs, and so maybe this guy is injury insurance, if anything.
He's injury insurance if two of your bigs are out. So, you know, if Derek goes down, then Trevor goes down, then you got Jeremy Evans, and then it's like, all right, I guess we got to do Grant Jarrett next. It seems like that's where he's going to be. I expect he'll get a lot of DMPs, but the Jazz do need to have a minimum of 13 guys on the roster.
Right.
They're at 12 right now. Maybe they give Chris Johnson a rest-of-the-year deal. Who knows what they're going to do. It looks like we shouldn't really plan on a late season push to kind of get the winning feeling on the team, even though we knew they'd be in the lottery. But the improvements we hope to see are not going to show up in the win column. I don't put any faith in them, you know, getting to 30 wins this year. I last week I would have thought they probably still got to 30. Now I kind of doubt it, and I think they're okay with it. I didn't hear Dennis Lindsay's interview, but just from what I saw, people's reactions to it, it sounds like the front office is content to be 25 wins again this year, if it means we get another good pick. Dante and Trey and Rodney and Rudy, everyone can take advantage of this time to develop. But, you know, this particular season is just going to be what it is.
Well,
and we'll try again next year.
Now, you bring up, since you segued right into where I wanted to talk to you about the trade or the tank watch. You know, the other thing, and I talked with Dan Clayton on Twitter about this earlier. He wrote up a nice piece over at Salt City Hoops about what these trades could mean for the Jazz. Tank watch, whatever it might be. One of the things I noticed, though, there's a couple of other teams involved in that. You've got Denver, and you've got Sacramento. You've got Denver, who I think got worse today, and they're a spot ahead of the Jazz, I believe. I believe they're a spot ahead of the Jazz in the West.
They're one game ahead, but they are worse. They got rid of Aaron Aflalo. They got rid of Alonzo Gee.
Got rid of
anybody else?
Got rid of
JaVale McGee.
Yep.
And let's see, who'd they bring back? They brought back Thomas Robinson, which it sounds like they were going to waive.
Right.
And then they also got Will Barton and Victor Claver, which moved Snow Radar. So, yeah, Denver's worse.
And they've got an unhappy point guard who has already demanded to be moved himself. And guess what? Trade deadline goes by, and they're still stuck with him, and he's still stuck there. It makes you wonder what's going to happen there.
Well, I think... Yeah, they didn't blow up their team as much as I thought they might, and so I think it looks more likely for Denver that they probably get rid of their coach this summer.
Right.
And I don't think too many Nuggets fans will be unhappy about that.
No, I don't think so either.
But, you know, a lot of them are ecstatic they got rid of JaVale McGee. They don't care what the price is. Nuggets have collected a lot of assets. But when it comes to the bottom of the West, Minnesota's going to stay there. Lakers are going to stay there. Sacramento, I think, since they got George Karl, I bet they get a few more wins. And so I see Denver and Utah being number 12 and 13 in the West rankings when all said and done.
That was the next team I was going to bring up was Sacramento. They make a trade. They bring in Andre Miller. But you're right. Their biggest acquisition to this point is George Karl, who may just get a few extra wins out of them. So suddenly... Sacramento moves ahead of the Jazz in the win column, which, you know, so between Sacramento, Denver, the Jazz, you've got a bit of change there that could happen at the bottom, and it'll be interesting tank watch as we head down the rest of the season.
Yeah, I expect Sacramento to at least do better than Denver and Utah. I don't think we'll see significant change, but you know, they could go like 40% the rest of the year. They could still get 30 games. I could see them doing that. And then above them, you know, the next team's the Pelicans, who will probably finish 41-41 season,
right?
Which is fine because the West is just too hard this year.
Yep.
And then you're gonna have the Thunder and Suns fighting it out for eighth spot, and I think Thunder will win that battle.
I think based on the trade today, the Suns are probably going to lose that battle for a lot of reasons. Had a nice conversation with a Suns fan today who is still scratching his head about all the trades they made today.
Yeah, they made one too many, I thought. Let's see. They picked up
Brandon Knight, but gave up both the Dragic brothers. They picked up Danny Granger, but it sounds like they're going to let him go as well.
Yeah, they also picked up Marcus Thornton.
Yep.
But they also let go Isaiah Thomas. So they lost. Oh, and they got rid of Tyler Ennis too. So they had four point guards, and they got rid of three of them. And they brought back Knight, who's a good combo guard. You know, the Brandon Knight, Eric Bledsoe backcourt, I actually kind of like.
They played together at Kentucky.
Yeah, so I think that's interesting. I mean, yeah. I don't think Phoenix isn't trying to lose. I just think the changes the Thunder made are better than the changes Phoenix made.
Agreed.
And Phoenix had to do something because Goran was blowing that thing up. So,
yeah,
you know, what Phoenix did might help them out next
long
year.
Term.
I think they're destined to come in ninth again.
So now let's go back to Oklahoma City. Okay, they pick up Enes Kanter. According to Adrian Wojnarowski, the thought process there is that they plan to sign Kanter long-term. Where does he fit in? You've got Steven Adams. You've got Serge Ibaka. How many minutes is Kanter going to get, the Mr. I don't get enough minutes for a third pick in the draft as it is?
Are they healthy right now?
I believe so. I believe Steven Adams and Ibaka have started most of the season, haven't they?
Yeah, I know Adams has been a starter, but I'm trying to remember if there's been any injury. There was an injury. Adams is out right now. He has a broken hand.
Oh, that's right.
So Kanter, he could walk right into the starting position. I don't know who else they got there. Nick Collison, I guess. So maybe he comes in and they let him get adjusted. He'll be ahead of Mitch McGarry. So, yeah, I can see Cantor starting pretty quickly and having him go from there. And, you know, a Cantor-Ibaka backcourt is actually pretty intriguing because Ibaka's a good defender and he's a decent scorer. He's actually a good three-point shooter, and so Cantor doesn't have to worry about trying to do that, I don't think. I think Cantor can do more of his down-low stuff and let Ibaka be a guy who kind of hangs around the rim. And just when it comes to defense, Ibaka's, you know, really good player. So they might complement each other really well. And then when Steven Adams comes back, you know, he's younger than the two of them, and he might... You know, he's a good defender in his own right, but, you know, that's an interesting, that's a good problem to have for the Thunder is how they work it out for the rest of the year. And then from there, Scott Brooks will decide, you know, what starting lineup do I like the best and how are these minutes going to divvy up what's going to work out best for us.
Two things came to mind for me with Oklahoma City today, though. One of them being that this is a nice luxury for them to have going forward. For one reason, the Thunder don't seem to have a scripted offensive set very often. I mean, you just don't see it from them. It's usually give the ball to Westbrook, give the ball to Durant, make something happen, and then everybody else ends up being, you know, the role players who feed off of whatever Durant and Westbrook do. Mm-hmm. Scottie Brooks doesn't seem to have, like I said, a well-scripted offensive game plan. So I don't know if that works to the favor of Cantor or not to the favor of Cantor. And the other thing is touches. You got a guy that's going to be able to post up in the post, but how often are you really going to go to the post with Cantor when you've got, again, Westbrook and Durant that are going to get the majority of the touches?
Yeah, they'll have the majority of the touches. He's probably going to have to get his points the way Steven Adams does, which is go get the offensive rebound and put it back, and he's really good at that. So, but I think the Thunder will learn soon enough that Cantor's just a better natural scorer than Adams.
Right.
And they can use that to their advantage when it comes to that. But, you know, defensively, you know, Favors is a good defensive partner too. So it's not like there's this incredible change now that he's next to Ibaka. But I think the Thunder are just, you know, in generally just that much more talented team that you know, Cantor's going to be the fifth guy, or at least fourth guy, whenever he's on the floor.
So. At least for the time being, until either they lose Westbrook or Westbrook or Durant in the future, which is likely a possibility. And if they do, then you could see a 1-2 punch involving maybe Cantor and one of them, or Cantor. You know, it would be interesting to see going forward, and maybe that's a long term thought process for them. Cantor's a cheap sign for right now. When you end up having to pay one of your superstars to stick around and can't keep them both.
Yeah, and they'll, I think Durant's up in 16 when the cap goes way up. I don't remember what Westbrook's deal is, but, you know, as long as Oklahoma keeps winning, I mean, if they get in as the 8th seed and they take the Warriors to the limit, I mean, wouldn't that be something that I could see the Thunder upsetting the Warriors in the first round and just, you know, running the table from there.
That might be one of the most exciting.
Kevin Durant's that good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that might be one of the most exciting series in the West, period.
Yeah. I mean, you know, who knows how the rest of the season is going to go, but Oklahoma's on a good enough trend that if someone slips, like, well, they could catch up to the Clippers, really. I mean, the Clippers have got to tread water as long as Blake Griffin's out, and I don't remember how long's he out, but it's a while.
Right.
So, you know, they could, if they move up to, if Thunder move up to seventh, then who would it be? Portland or somebody? I think if they move up to seventh, then you can almost write them in for the Western Conference Finals.
That's true. All right. Any other thoughts about today that you have? Any surprises for you other than what we've talked about?
I mean, I was surprised just how active it was. I mean, there was a lot of trades. There's going to be a lot of digesting going on.
Yeah.
Who knows how a lot of this is going to play out. We've seen big trades where it didn't work out for any team involved. I'm thinking of the Dwight Howard 14 trade.
Yeah.
Where that just didn't really seem to help anybody, even though on paper it looked like, hey, these are the winners and these are the losers.
Right.
So a lot of these teams got to figure out the new chemistry. I was surprised that Milwaukee blew up the way they did.
Yeah.
They had such a good turnaround from last year, and then they decide to make this change. And it sounds like mainly because they didn't want to pay Brandon Knight what he was going to be getting. So they brought over Michael Carter-Williams and Miles Plumlee, and they got Tyler Ennis from the Suns.
Well, and I think at this point, Milwaukee's got nothing to lose. Your what should have been Rookie of the Year is down for the entire season. You might as well move forward, you know, with retooling, rebuilding, if you will, and make way for next year when you hope to have him back fully healthy.
Yeah, I think they know that whoever they face in the first round, they don't have a chance.
Right.
But, you know, Michael Carter-Williams is not as good a point guard as Brandon Knight. Neither is Tyler Ennis. But maybe they think Brandon Knight was going to command enough money that they just couldn't do it. And so this way they have a couple younger point guards on their rookie deals that they can try to help along and see if either of them winds up being a starter. Jason Kidd has shown that he's good with developing players in his only his second year, but he did good in Brooklyn, and he's been doing good in Milwaukee. And, you know, he's got Mason Plumlee in the Nets who thrived under Kidd, and now you've got Brandon Knight who had a career year here under Kidd, so maybe he can teach Michael Carter-Williams how to not tank and turn him into something.
Maybe. My winner of the day that has gone completely under the radar because of some of these other trades, Portland.
Mm-hmm.
Portland picking up Aaron LaFlalo might be the best trade of the day for anybody because they add depth, they add another scorer to their team, and kind of give it a new look offensively. I think they got better.
Yeah, and they didn't have to give up much.
No.
I don't know exactly what the picks were that they gave up, but their talent on their roster, you know, they got rid of three guys at the end of the bench to get Aflalo and Gee, and Gee's going to be toward the end of their bench, but Aflalo is their sixth man now, and that's a great sixth man to have.
Absolutely. You've got a luxury now because now you've got Aflalo, and is Batum starting for them?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now you have Aflalo who can come off the bench and probably give you 20 points a game if you really wanted to. Again, they didn't have depth, and that was probably one of their biggest question marks for the first half of the season. They go and address that with this trade, and Aflalo is huge. He's a great three-point shooter and he will fit in that system nicely.
Yeah.
So, couldn't have done any worse.
Yeah, Aflalo's more ready to contribute than CJ McCollum, who hasn't been doing much for him. It's really been like, even Steve Blake hasn't been doing much. I'm just kind of looking at their team now, and yeah, there's just not a lot of...
I wonder at one point in time, though, if Aflalo earns that starting spot over either Wes Matthews probably, but Batum maybe, and you put Batum back on the bench. You have that luxury with Batum because he plays well off the bench. Really, they have a luxury now with a three-guard set between Batum, Matthews, and Aflalo that you can start any two of those three with any one of those three coming off the bench, and you don't lose anything.
Yeah, I don't see them making that change because I think they want Aflalo to be that sixth-man scorer.
Right.
They don't need Batum to be a scorer because he is on the floor with Lillard and Matthews and Aldridge, and so... I think it would be best for Aflalo if he is the sixth man. And he might not like that he's not starting. I have no idea. He's probably thrilled that he's on a playoff team again. So
I wonder if he'll play tomorrow night for the Jazz. If he does, against the Jazz, if he does, that could be quite the interesting welcome after what he did to Alec Burks earlier in the season.
No, except Alec won't be there, so I guess it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yes,
yeah,
but I'm just suggesting the welcome. If he's allowed to play past his physicals and everything, could be an interesting storyline on tomorrow night's game to have a Aflalo back in Salt Lake.
Yeah.
So.
Well, let's look at that. So now that the trade's happened, we have 3 home games to try to get used to this.
Yeah.
Portland, they'll probably lose Portland. Then they got the Spurs, and, you know, if as long as the Spurs decide they want to win that game, they'll probably win that game. But the Jazz have shown tenacity, so who knows? After that, they got the Lakers. They'll probably beat the Lakers. So, Jazz are still going to be a fun team to watch. They just didn't add anybody. If you just pretend that Cantor and Novak got injured for the rest of the year, it's still the Jazz team.
Yeah, you lose a double-double in 15 points and rebounds per game. But if Gobert can make up for that on the offensive end with some putbacks, maybe you don't lose a lot. But Cantor's a big loss. And when you don't bring somebody back that big offensively to cover for him, you do put yourself in a position that winning games isn't going to be as easy as it was before.
Yeah, they'll need Trevor Booker to step up in that regard.
Exactly.
And they don't have that 3-point shooter with Novak who had just started to earn his way on the floor.
You really don't have a guy that stretches the floor at all now because Booker is it, because Cantor could give you 18-footer, 15-footer. You don't get that luxury with Gobert. And you're right, Booker's going to have to step up now and give you that mid-range jump shot and 3-point and deep range that you would hope you can get from him, because you just don't have that now.
Yeah, and they'll have to hope that Rodney Hood comes back and he's healthy and he's ready to play and they can get some good minutes out of him.
Yep, totally agree. All right, well, let's go ahead and wrap up this edition, unless you have something else you want to add, because we both have got places to go tonight, so we'll make this a short one. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
All right, well, we'll wrap up this edition, episode 11 of the Jedi and Germs Show, brought to you by TornBrySports.com. And we want to thank you all for listening. If you have comments, questions, thoughts, things you want to throw at us, tweet us at GermsGuy, at JediZog, or at Jedi and Germs. We're always welcome to discussion. Thanks a lot for joining us. Have a good night. John, your turn. Take us out.
Bye, everybody.